This is Radio Influence.
Introducing the Crusher.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass. We're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us with any questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate or help you out with, please let us know. Get to us on our website. Crushperformance.com is the website. Info@crushperformance is our email, and we answer every message we get. If we love your topic, if we like your idea, we may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to it, and we've done that recently here to ideas coming into our inbox on social media, Twitter at Jeff Crush, Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel. You could search out Crush Performance as we just try to link you up with the world of performance to help you achieve your goals, of course, and really truly understand what it takes to achieve human maximum performance, which is really what the last few shows have been about. As we head into the fall, we all know what an incredible time of year this is in the world of sport. We have high school and college sports kicking off. We've got the NFL underway. The Major League Baseball postseason is taking shape. NHL camps are opening up. The NBA is rumbling away. Soccer's happening, well, year-round everywhere. Great tennis, great golf, just great performances everywhere you look. How do you get there? How did they get there? That's sort of the conversation from the last two shows. Last week, we went back to a conversation we had with Dan Pink, author and speaker, about his book, Drive and Motivation, what really motivates us, and the separation between what we know from a scientific standpoint about human motivation and what actually is happening out there in the real world. It doesn't connect. We're not doing it right, and I think we're missing a lot of opportunities. So take charge. Take charge of your destiny and your future and your environment. That's sort of the message there. And today I wanted to continue that conversation as we set everybody up for their fall season and heading into this sort of really, really cool year as everybody gets back to school and back on schedules. Today we're going to go back to a conversation we had with Jeff Colvin, author and senior editor at large from Fortune. His book was called Talent is Overrated, What Really Separates World-Class Performers from Everybody Else. It is a fantastic conversation. And once you get an understanding of all of these concepts, what motivates us, how do you evaluate where you're at right now, what does a performance environment look like, you also really need to understand what it takes to be great. And this conversation is one of the most powerful conversations I think we've had on the show, really looking at what it takes to be great. And I think one of the things I truly love about Jeff Colvin and his work, a business background for sure, you might think, what does this have to do with sport? Well, he wrote an article in 2009, maybe earlier than that, What It Takes to Be Great. And it really correlated the high performers in business. It looked at high performers in sport and music and academics. And it sort of searched out the common thread between these high achievers and what they do, and why they have turned out to be who they are. And the one key factor I can tell you right now is effort. Effort, perseverance, and grit. Those intangibles that everybody talks about, that everybody's looking for. That comes maybe more from your environment than anything else, but it's also internal. These special achievers are special because they've made themselves special through a series of events and just gritty determination and a clear idea of what they're trying to accomplish. It all comes together. Today, we're going to revisit that great conversation with Jeff Colvin. Later in the show, I'm going to finish up and follow through with my promise from a few episodes ago, talking about the top priorities for performance in our programs. Last week, I sort of covered number one, which was rest, recovery, recuperation, sleep in there, but I got sidetracked and maybe a little bit long-winded, but I think it was important to do that. Talking about identifying where you're at right now in order to really accurately plan out where you want to move going forward, and how we go about helping our organizations and our individual top performers really, really, truly achieve their potential. It's not magic, everybody. It's so doable. And again, you know, in the book that I wrote, The Performance Plan, one of the concepts in there is the fact that greatness is up for grabs. It really, truly is. If you are willing to go and do it, but you also have to know how to do it, and you have to have the resources and people around you to get it done. And sometimes it just happens magically. Sometimes it's orchestrated and engineered, but either way, it can be done. It absolutely can be done. The one defining factor, I believe, in achieving your definition of greatness, whatever that might be, because it's different for everybody, is putting in the time and the effort. And we're here, of course, on the show and at Crush Performance to help you make sure your efforts are focused and going in the right direction. Well-directed effort can achieve unbelievable results. Unbelievable results. And that's what it's all about. I want to start this show off right now, going to our conversation with Jeff Colvin, Senior Editor-at-Large from Fortune Magazine. Here's that conversation as we welcome Jeff to the show.
Hey, it's my great pleasure.
Well, we've been looking forward to this conversation, of course. You're an award-winning author and broadcaster. You're a speaker in today's most significant trends in business. And when I read your article back in 2006 in Fortune, titled What It Takes to Be Great, I was enamored at the parallels between business and sport. Of course, my background being high-performance sport. I just wanted to ask you to kick this off, you know, as an editor of a business magazine, what led you down the path of investigating this mystery of what it takes to be great and where talent comes from?
Well, I'll tell you, we were doing an article on great performance in business. And actually, someone else proposed it to me. It was something I'd been thinking about for a long time, but hadn't written about this. When someone proposed it, I really jumped at the chance because I remembered something. I had a vague memory of hearing about some research that had been done in this area. And so I thought, okay, there's a lot here. This is something rich. Let's go. I had no idea what I was going to find once I got into this. It turned out that there has been 30 years of research on this topic, and most of it has not been well translated for a general audience. But it's incredibly interesting, incredibly significant, in my opinion. And that's what became the basis of the article. And then the response to the article was such that it was clear there was a good idea for a book here.
Well, and thank goodness you did it, because I'm telling you, the article in 2006 Fortune was like the teaser, the appetizer that got us all thinking, and we're going, what more could there possibly be? Looking back at your research, now that you've had time to sort of reflect in retrospect, I guess going into this, it must have been interesting to, I guess, sort of analyze the general impressions about talent, where it really comes from. The idea that it's naturally born, or the idea that it's developed over time under certain circumstances.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, what I found was that the vast majority of people, including myself before I got into the research, the vast majority of people really believe that the great performers do come into this world with a gift, a one in a million gift. You've either got it or you don't. And that's the primary thing that distinguishes the great performers from the mass of humanity. And that view is very deep-seated. People hold on to that. They believe it deeply. And one of the surprises of doing all this research and then writing and speaking about it is that a lot of people initially don't like the findings of the research, which say that one in a million gift isn't all that important. And in fact, a lot of the researchers would say that one in a million gift doesn't exist. I didn't go that far in the book, but I got to tell you, there are researchers who think that's the case.
Well, you went to the point to say talent is overrated. And after reading your book, and of course, being involved in the sports world, we're always, you know, one of the first traits when we're trying to select and identify potential future players at the highest level of sport is this whole idea of talent. They say, and maybe we throw around the word talent a little too loosely, but we say, okay, they have to have talent in order to be recognized. And then they have to have these other attributes, whether it's character and aggressiveness and that competitiveness. They have to have an understanding of the game knowledge. I was very interested to see how you sort of tied the business world, the sports world, music, and chess. And I guess I came from all of the research coming together. But I guess the idea of talent is more or less a human thing, regardless of your endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right when you say talent is a word that we all throw around very loosely. We do. And so when I call this book Talent is Overrated, I mean talent in a very specific sense. And that's in the sense where we say somebody is a natural born golfer, or he's a born pilot, she's a born leader, he's a born surgeon. The idea of a very specific ability that is innate, you are born with it. Talent in that sense is what the researchers say is not very important and may not exist at all. It all comes from other stuff. Now, in sports, it has to be said right up front, there are certain physical attributes which absolutely can give somebody a big advantage. I mean, it's so obvious, it doesn't need saying, but it still should be said out loud. If you're 5 feet tall, you're never going to be an NFL lineman. And if you're 7 feet tall, you're never going to be an Olympic gymnast, no matter how much practicing you may do, right? So there are these these boundaries on what you can do in sports because of physical traits.
Well said. We are joined by Mr. Jeffrey Colvin, longtime editor and columnist for Fortune Magazine and author of the great publication, Talent is Overrated, which is our topic for today. Right off the bat in the book, you talk about something that to me was very counterintuitive. You mentioned how people sort of regard the research in sort of an off-taste sort of manner. They don't really want to accept the fact that, hey, maybe right, I could have been great if I was in the right situation. But you also talk about something that I thought was very, very interesting, the experience trap. The fact that people with lots of experience were no better than those with little experience in certain situations. It seems counterintuitive, that's for sure. And I think, this maybe sort of sets the tone for understanding of where talent really comes from.
That's exactly right. If you ask people what distinguishes great performers, if your kid asks you this, if your son or daughter asks, one of the things that you would very likely say is, well, the great performers work very hard. And it's true that the great performers do work very hard. The problem with that answer is that there are lots of people who work very hard who are not world-class great performers. And the research goes further than that. It says that there are plenty of people who work hard, who've been doing a job for decades, who do not get any better. And in fact, in some cases, they actually get worse with time. The ability of auditors to detect fraud, the ability of probate officers to detect whether somebody's going to go back to prison, the ability of surgeons to predict recovery time. A lot of these things actually decline with experience. And so it's got to be something more than just doing something for a long time. And of course, the research says it is something more than that. You're quite right.
Right. Well, it's very interesting to think. We could maybe try to pick it apart. I'm not sure if we really want to have time to do this, but I'm pretty interested in this whole concept because, it could be maybe complacency in the workplace. It could be, not keeping up to date with new technology. It could be just the humdrum of the grind once you sort of get into it. And the fact that, new young people coming into any profession might have an edge on technology and new knowledge and new learnings.
That's exactly right. And that does seem to be a lot of the explanation. And it really gets then to the heart. But, the question we've sort of talked around up till now without answering it is, okay, then what is the secret? Where does great performance really come from? And the answer is, it comes from constantly pushing yourself, to go just beyond what you are currently able to do. Constantly pushing yourself or being pushed to do something you can't quite do. And the people who've been in a job for years or decades without pushing themselves don't get any better. And they don't keep up with knowledge in an advancing field. And that's how they actually get worse. And so we begin to see now where the real explanation of great performance is.
Right. And, you know, you talk about it, you sort of get to it, you know, in the book when we talk about how you go about performing that work. There's a lot of people that work hard. But what the key, it seems, if we look at all the people who have succeeded, it's what you do with that hard work and what you learn with that hard work. Let me ask you this, Mr. Colvin, if we're, you know, sort of go along the line that hard work is definitely important, but doing the right work, this idea of deliberate practice is so crucial. How important is the environment you're in terms of maybe a business culture or a company culture, in our world, a sporting culture? This is something that I think is truly very important to understand.
Well, it certainly is very important. I mean, look, this is hard. Okay, I emphasize this all the time. When I talk about where great performance comes from, I'm not promising something for nothing.
Right.
Okay? I'm not giving anything away for free.
Right.
This is hard. And to push yourself like this for hours a day, every day, which is what the great performers in every field have in common. They all do that. It's hard. And so the environment you're in is critically important, because if the environment is hostile to this, hostile to something that's already very, very difficult, then the odds that anybody's going to do it fall to just about zero. But if the environment is right, you know, if it's encouraging, if it helps make it easier to do this kind of thing, then the odds go up dramatically. And so it's critical.
Right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, longtime editor and columnist in Fortune magazine, author of the book Talent is Overrated. If we look at the concept of this, you know, hard work, deliberate work, work with purpose and building on it over periods of time, I think there's something to be said here for, you know, maybe the coaches of a team, parents of a family for that matter, and also maybe executives in a business. This can be applied across the board in pretty much everything you do at some degree or another. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the importance of those figures, whether you want to call them teachers, coaches, mentors, whatever, the importance of those figures is paramount. And here's the reason. Remember, I said you have to be pushed just beyond what you can currently do. Okay. Well, most people, especially in the early stages of their development, but sometimes also in the very advanced stages, most people are not qualified to figure out what the next step is for them. You know, what is the next thing that they can't quite do,
right,
that they have to push themselves to? They need somebody to tell them. And the other thing is, if you don't get continual, good, honest feedback on how you're doing, then this is all worthless. It will never work. And so you need somebody to give you that feedback. And again, most of us, most people in most fields, are not qualified to assess their own performance. And so everybody, darn near everybody, needs somebody in that role. Parent, teacher, coach, mentor. There is a reason that the world's greatest golfers still go to teachers. Okay? They need that other person to push them and give them feedback.
Right. Well, in your book, you mentioned that, you know, one of the largest and hottest commodities on the face of the planet today is ability. And we're talking about top performance and high caliber ability in any endeavor. And I believe that's certainly the case in the sporting world. You know, it's the it's the people that are willing to make that a commitment to achieve and get to that level that really reap the reward. And you also said something later in the book that was interesting to me, where, you know, everybody looks at all these people who are successful and are great, and they're considered lucky. The people who do the work, I think is what you said, the people who do the work are perceived as lucky, where, you know, not you know, that's a sort of a skewed view of, yeah, of that scenario. The people who work the hardest, I guess, create opportunity for themselves.
That's exactly right. And what you find out is that those great performers, when they hear that other people consider them lucky, often kind of resent it because they know that they didn't get where they are by luck. They know better than anybody how much work it was and that it wasn't luck, except luck in the sense of having the right parents, the right coaches, so forth, to push them along.
Absolutely.
But they know how hard it is.
Right. Well, and you know, I guess if we're going to apply the learnings here, we can look at some of the people who were successful. And one of the great analogies you have in your book is the idea in chapter four, titled A Better Idea. You looked at Jerry Rice, for example, one of the epic all-time great players in the NFL, and you sort of analyzed how he went about his business. How was somebody like Jerry Rice, who was a rough and tumble, high-performance player, able to extend his career, to stay in the game long enough to play that length of time to get those great numbers? And I thought it was very fascinating to see how he broke it down and how he approached the game and practicing the game in order to sort of, I guess, save himself, but also push himself to the next level without, you know, enduring the dangers of the sport.
Yep. He's a great example of everything we're talking about. And the reason I chose him, there are a few reasons. One, there's no argument about his greatness. In the position of a receiver in football, no one has come close to what he has achieved. So, first off, everyone can agree, greatest receiver in the history of football.
Without question.
Without question. Okay, so that's good. Next thing, when you look at his early career, meaning high school and even college, he was an excellent player. But nobody looked at him and said, this is the future world's greatest receiver. He wasn't drafted number one or number two or anything. I think he was number 15. He wasn't the fastest guy around. And in that position, speed is supposed to be paramount. So, you know, he was really good. But going into the NFL, he wasn't everybody's pick as the future greatest. But similarly, it's very clear what he did to become so great. He trained harder than anybody, essentially than anybody in the game, regardless of position. He trained 6 days a week, or sometimes 7 days a week, all year round, during the season, off season, whatever. He did a lot of his training on his own, and a part of the reason for that was that nobody else could keep up with him. He would train hours and hours a day in the most unbelievably punishing ways. And he chose his training for exactly what he needed in the position of receiver. So he did drills that would give him explosive power. You know, he would run, he would sprint up hills, stuff like that. Jumping, so he could out-jump the opponent. Strength, so that he could wrestle the ball away from a defender, no matter how big and strong the defender was. And his training regimen, again, there's no debate, was simply unmatched in the NFL. Now, wide receivers do not last 20 years in the NFL. It's an incredibly punishing position.
Exactly.
And no wide receiver ever has lasted 20 years in the NFL except for one, and that's him.
Jerry Rice.
And so he is the perfect example of all these principles we're talking about.
Yep, no question. And very interesting, I guess, last note on Jerry Rice is he spent very little time actually playing football. He did everything
right.
He needed to become a good football player, but he knew the dangers were in the game, so he stayed away from it. And, of course, that is intellect at its highest level.
Absolutely. I mean, I got out the calculator and just figured out how much time he spent practicing and preparing versus how much time he spent actually performing in the game. Now, it was extreme in his case. I can't remember the figure, but it was well under 5% of his total time was spent actually performing. And, you know, 95% was spent preparing. Now, the reason I made that point was, think how different it is from the way we all are in business. We frequently don't spend any time preparing or practicing at all. We're expected to just go out there and perform all day, every day. And it so violates the principles of great performance that it's striking.
It is striking, and it's really counterintuitive. Staying away from the game kept him in the game. Lessons to be learned by top performers, no doubt about it. We have to cut out for a quick break, everybody. When we come back, we're going to finish off our conversation with Jeff Colvin. Talent, is it overrated? And what really separates world-class performers from everybody else? That continues right after this on Crush Performance. Setting up a hot date, a night out with the gang, or maybe a work function? Make it easy on yourself with Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is the place to go for great seats at a great price, and it's all backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. And it's really easy. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off of your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Get your sport fix with NFL games, NCAA, no matter your game, use the Vivid Seats app to make it all happen. Or get to the hottest concerts and live events. With the Vivid Seats app, you can sort by price or you can look for seats in the section or row of your choice. All new customers get 10% off of their first purchase. Go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app and punch in the promo code INFLUENCE. Again, all new customers get 10% off of their first purchase. Go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app and punch in the promo code INFLUENCE. Get out there and make some memories and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live events.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kershaw here. Listen, if you have questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. Crushperformance.com is the website. Info at Crush Performance is the email. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Crush, on Facebook, Instagram, and our YouTube channel. Please go to or search out Crush Performance. Today, we are going back to a conversation to get a better understanding of what it truly takes to be great. We always say, if you want to figure out what to do, look to the top achievers, the best of the best, and try to figure out what to do. Sometimes you'll find out what not to do as well, but learn from the top performers. And not always the top performers in your particular area of expertise. Sometimes it's even better to look outside the box and look what other people are doing in other areas of performance. And some of the greatest studies on skill acquisition and talent development have been done looking at music. And in our conversation with Jeff Colvin, of course, the author of the great book, Talent is Overrated, we talked about one very important study that was done on musicians and in particular, violinists. And it really shed some light on what it truly takes to become a top performer.
Yeah, it really was. And the study you're talking about is actually very famous. This is sort of the foundation of all the work that's been done in the field. And it's great, well, for a lot of reasons. It was pretty simple what they did in a way. It's hard work, but it was pretty simple. They went to a famous conservatory in Berlin. This is a school that takes people at the age of 18 or so, it's like college basically, turns them out at the age of 21 or 22. And it's a very elite school. These people go on, some the best of them go on to careers in major orchestras around the world. So they looked at this school, at the violinists in the school, and they asked the professors, please categorize the violinists into three categories. Top category are the people who are going to go into great orchestras, Berlin Philharmonic, London Symphony Orchestra, stuff like that, or maybe even become international soloists. The middle category, second category, is people who are very good. You know, they could make a living in orchestras and so forth. They're just not the top group. And then the third group is people who are probably not going to make a living as performers, but they'll make a living as music teachers in high schools and stuff like that. Okay, so they categorized the violinists into those. Then the researchers studied these violinists in enormous detail. They had them keep diaries about how they spend every minute of the day for months and months. The researchers interviewed the parents and friends of these people to find out what they had been like as kids and so forth. They accumulated a huge amount of research. Now, here's what they found. What these violinists did when they got up in the morning every day seemed to be fairly similar. they spent a lot of time going to classes. They practiced in groups and stuff like that. And similarly, they had all started playing the violin at about the same age, 5 or 6. They were similar in all kinds of ways. The researchers could find only one significant difference that distinguished group A from B from C. And that was in the lifetime total of hours spent practicing alone. And the difference was very striking, and it survived every test of statistical significance. By the time they graduated from the school, the top group had accumulated about 10,000 hours of lifetime practice. The second group had accumulated about 7,500 hours, and the third group had accumulated about 5,000 hours of total lifetime practice. That's what distinguished the best from the middle, from the lower group. And you know, in a way, it's so simple, but it took this exhaustive research to establish what a lot of people had previously thought. And then there's since been all kinds of follow-up research on all kinds of different people in different fields, which tend to substantiate the same finding.
Right. And it brings on a whole interesting perception of these people who are great. We don't see them putting in these thousands and thousands of hours of practice, the deliberate practice and the individual practice where these violinists really made their mark, the ones that really dedicated themselves to personal alone time, hammering away and mastering their skills. And then when they go out and step on the stage, of course, we all perceive it as, wow, these guys are gifted. They make it look so easy. It looks automatic. And you also refer to this whole concept of automatic, making it look automatic. Yet, if we look at truly what it takes to make it look automatic, the great performers in any endeavor have made a point, as you mentioned in the book, they've made a point of doing everything but letting it become automatic. They're always looking for a way to get better and push themselves.
That's exactly right. You know, you those of us who just observe these fabulous performers think that, oh my gosh, they could do it in their sleep. You know, it's automatic for them. But it's just as you say, the researchers found, no, actually, it's the opposite. They never let it become automatic, because when it becomes automatic, it stops getting better, right? You're not thinking about it anymore.
Right.
What they do is work very hard to make sure it never becomes automatic, that they are always focused intensely on what they're doing, very consciously, you know, doing every bit of it. And so it's just as you say, it's very deceptive when we see them. They make it look easy, and we're all tempted to think that, well, for them, it must be easy. No, it isn't easy.
Right.
Not even for them. You know, they did the thousands of hours of work that we never saw in order to be able to do it the way we see them doing.
Right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, editor and columnist for Fortune magazine, author of the great publication, Talent is Overrated. Would it be safe to say then, over through these years of experience, the practice, the top performers get a true understanding of what it takes to be great? Maybe they get a feel for how to push themselves and what they need to do to get better. Maybe they have a better sense of what's going on around them and they know how to adapt. Would that be safe to say? Could this be one of the true keys that separate the great performers from the average mass of people out there?
I think the answer is that yes, it becomes that.
Right.
In other words, they attain that ability. They don't start out with it. And in fact, as you say, they become able to push themselves. But they don't start out that way. Virtually all of us have to be pushed by somebody else in the early years. And in sports, and music in particular, where people start out as kids. And in today's world, they have to start out as kids if they're going to become successful world-class performers. They have to be pushed by someone, typically, of course, their parents, to get a little better, to do these things that they can't quite do. And that raises actually one of the great questions, and it is a really great question, mm-hmm. That I get asked about all the time, which is, what should a parent do? You know, is it okay, is it right to push a kid to do something far beyond what he or she would ever think or, you know, try to do on their own. Is it right to make them do that when they're in no position? They're far too young to make a mature judgment about this of their own. Or is it a good thing to do? Because it's the only hope they ever have of becoming a world-class great performer. Well, and I got to tell you, there is no easy answer to that.
Well, you know, in the book, I remember reading, you talk about Mozart, for example. You talk about the Olympic gymnast. You talk about Tiger Woods. You know, Mozart started young. And, you know, if we look at his developmental curve, he actually got to a high level of composing and music at a fairly young age. But he started really early.
This is the thing, you know.
Right.
People talk about what an incredible prodigy Mozart was. Well, yes, I guess so. But remember, his father was a very famous music teacher and composer, Leopold Mozart. And when little Wolfgang was born, his father, Leopold, stopped composing. That was the end of his composing career. He devoted himself to instructing Wolfgang. And, in fact, what we have then is a situation where this little boy was living with an expert teacher who devoted essentially all of his time to teaching and training this kid from the age of 3 in performing and composing music. Now, by the time Mozart wrote a work of music that is regarded today as a masterpiece, he was 21 years old. And people think, oh my gosh, it's a miracle that he could write such a great piece of music at age 21. But the scholars on Mozart say, well, hold on. At the age of 21, he had been receiving intensive instruction for 18 years.
Right.
It's not surprising at all that he was able to do it at that point.
You're right. We're talking with Jeff Colvin, author of the book Talent is Overrated. Well, now, again, this brings us full circle back into what might be kind of a confusing conundrum here. Early on, we talked about people who are into a profession for extended periods of time also almost get worse at their endeavor. Yeah. Now we're going the other way and we're saying, okay, you need this experience over long periods of time in order to have a knowledge base to get better. So we're almost contradicting ourselves. We could see why everybody gets frustrated.
That's absolutely right. And you're very wise to point out this apparent contradiction. It's easily resolved, by the way.
Right.
The distinction is this. The ones who get better are the ones who keep pushing themselves no matter how far they go. They keep pushing themselves to get a little better than they already are. They are forcing themselves to do things they can't quite do. The ones who don't get better and who then actually decline and deteriorate are the ones who never do. They just crank out the work mindlessly every day, same as they always did it. They get lazy, they get distracted and stuff like that. And that's why they never get there.
Well, and very interesting. I guess this has a lot to do with a few minutes left here. I guess this has a lot to do with really, truly knowing where you want to go. And I guess maybe the whole concept of thinking big. There's nothing wrong with this idea of thinking big if you're willing to commit the time and effort. And I guess it has a lot to do with getting the right people around you. If you have all these magical things come together, greatness is truly up for grabs.
That's a great way to put it. It's up for grabs. It's available. It's not easy. That's key to point out.
Okay? Right. Oh, definitely.
We know how to get there, but it isn't easy. The thing to keep in mind is just what you said. It's available. And to me, that is the great message that comes out of all this research. It is incredibly liberating because what it says is you don't need the one in a million gift that you either have or you don't. Great performance, you know, achieving these incredible heights is available. We know how it's done. It may not be easy, but we know how it's done, and virtually anybody can do it. So the path is open. And in fact, it's up to each of us to decide how far down that path we want to go.
Oh, very interesting. You know, I'm going to extend this segment here because I have to ask you one more question before we sort of wrap up. In that light, let's take business leaders. Let's take GMs of sports teams. Let's take coaches trying to put together a lineup and a culture inside of a locker room. How much of this information can be used by those business leaders, those, I guess, you know, culture leaders in terms of, you know, creating the culture and stimulating innovation and creating an environment of passion that's obviously so clearly needed in order to create greatness inside of a business culture, but also so individuals can strive for themselves individually?
Yeah, well, of course, all of it can be used by those people.
Right.
And the great opportunity here is particularly to use this in the world of business. In the world of sports, this is all understood.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. Everything I'm talking about here has been well known, well accepted by everybody in the sports world for eons, forever. And what's amazing is that in the business world, it's like we forget it. We forget all this stuff that we know is true in sports. We pretend it doesn't even exist in business. And most companies, therefore, are not good at applying these principles. The few that are good tend to be great performers. And the opportunity for all the other companies is to start applying these principles. Start thinking independently, creatively about how to apply them. We don't have time to talk about it now, but I do talk about it some in the book. They can be applied in all kinds of ways. And there is such opportunity for competitive advantage in the business world by applying these principles.
Huh, great stuff. Well, there's a lot to be learned in the book. By the way, the book is a Crush must read. This is a mandatory reading for all the athletes we work with. And it's on the top of our list for our radio show here for what that's worth. But we really appreciate your time tonight. I really enjoyed the insights. For everybody out there, the website is jeffcolvin.com. Other great books, Talent is Overrated, of course, The Upside of the Downturn, and a real cool take, I think, Angel Consumers, Demons Consumers, Angels versus Demons. I kind of like that whole take on the consumer side of things as well.
Yeah, that's a topic unto itself, I have to say. We can't get into that now, but that's a good one.
No, great stuff. And, of course, the blog is on there and all your stuff. It's jeffcolvin.com. Mr. Colvin, listen, I've really been looking forward to this. I appreciate all your time tonight. And, boy, you know what? I can't wait to get with you again to delve a little farther down the well of where talent comes from and how everybody can get out there and achieve it.
It's a great thing to talk about, and I'd love to talk about it more.
Great. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, such an incredible conversation with Jeff Colvin. Again, we've thanked him 1,000 times for that conversation. We've had a lot of great conversations and incredible guests on the show, but this one really epitomizes what we're all about and helping our audience achieve their goals and objectives in life, no matter what they're doing. So I hope you have a chance to listen, take notes, maybe go back and share this conversation with your friends, your boss maybe your coach, your teacher. But take it to heart, because inside of these types of conversations lie the secrets to truly, truly achieving your goals. Coming up after this break, I will fulfill my promise from a couple shows ago and finish off our discussion on our top priorities for performance. That's right after this on Crush Performance, everybody. Stick around. Support for Crush Performance comes from Flava Naturals, a brand changing the way people think about and consume chocolate. You've probably heard that the cocoa flavanols found in dark chocolate promote brain function, heart health, and exercise performance. But did you know you'd have to eat at least 5 typical dark chocolate bars a day to match the flavanols used in many of the studies? Flava Naturals harnesses the power of nature with a line of breakthrough decadent chocolate bars and cocoa powder with an amazing 500 to 900 milligrams of naturally sourced cocoa flavanol antioxidants per serving. Flava Naturals chocolate is made from all natural ingredients and contains 5 to 9 times the cocoa flavanols of a typical dark chocolate bar. This is achieved by starting with some of the highest antioxidant cocoa beans in the world and preserving flavanols using all natural preparation methods. And just as important, Flava bars and Flava mix taste fantastic. My true test group is my wife and 3 daughters. When they got their hands on the bars and mix, they loved them. They loved the flavors of the bars, and they're using the mix to make chocolate drinks or using it in baking. They're putting it in their yogurt. I'm putting it in my smoothies for snacks and for recovery, and you can too. Go to FlavaNaturals.com today to learn more and enter the discount code CRUSH for 20% off your next order. That's FlavaNaturals.com. Discount code CRUSH with a K. Chocolate was your weakness. With FlavaNaturals, it's your strength.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. Not a lot of time left. It's been three shows since I promised that we would cover the Crush top priorities for performance. If you listened to the show before, of course, you know what they are. Last week on our show with Dan Pink, when we talked about motivation, I finished that show off with our priority number one, which is rest, recovery, and recuperation. Inside of that, sleep is the number one human performance priority. Without enough sleep, everything else you do suffers. Now, some of the nutritionists might argue that nutrition and hydration are number one, but I'm telling you right now that sleep is the number one priority. We schedule that in and we build everything else around that, including our feeding times. So priority number one, quality rest and recovery and recuperation. We build every single program around the amount of quality time available in a 24-hour period for rest and recovery. The intensity and the volume of the work, the type of work that we get done, are all determined by the amount of rest. The amount of rest, of course, includes quality sleep time. Now, when it comes to sleep, there's a couple strategies. We'll be doing a fantastic sleep show coming up this fall, but there's a couple strategies you can use to really help yourself out. Understand how much you need each night, get a new routine, and stick to it. We prefer that if our athletes and top performers get to bed early and wake up early rather than staying up late and waking up late, you get into that deep sleep earlier and you get into a more regular pattern when it comes to your daily schedule. So that's one hint. The other thing that we like to do with our sleep is we like to block it over a period of time, whether it's 5 days, 7 days, depending on what your week looks like. In professional sport, there's no Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. There's just day after day after day. So we block our sleep accordingly, and we make sure if there's a terrible flight or a late game or overtime or extra innings or whatever it might be that disrupts your sleep, we make sure in a period of time we get the sleep required, and naps are a big, big part of that. So number one, rest, recovery, and sleep. Number two, nutrition, hydration. That's the second priority for human performance. If you're not taking care of that on a 24-hour basis, you're not even close to your potential. And the easiest thing you can do to decrease risk of injury and increase your daily performance is make sure you're hydrating properly and you're feeding yourself regularly on a schedule. And also, when we talk about this very, very important topic, you guys know how hypersensitive we are to sugar, hence the Crush war on sugar. We really make sure the type of foods our high performers and top performers are consuming are conducive to what's going on around them. We are very, very conscious of the amount of sugars and the type of carbohydrates we're consuming as well. Priority number one, rest, recovery, sleep. Number two, hydration and nutrition. Number three is posture and range of motion. It's your setup. You know, I was golfing a few years ago with one of my college roommates, university roommates, who was a golf pro, and he's a fantastic teacher on top of it all. But we're all golfing, and you know what? I'm not going to say that I was a better athlete than those guys. They were way, way better golfers than me. But I would kick their butts in just about everything else we would do. But they would just hand it to me on the golf course. And one day I just said, Bob, how is it possible that I can't hit this ball the way you guys do? And this is what he said to me, and it stuck with me ever since. He said, you're done before you start. Your setup is so off, you don't have a chance. And that's the analogy I use for our postures. Look, most sports are one-sided. Even our hockey players, we say muscle asymmetries from left to right, front to back. We look at skeletal alignment and we look at range of motion around the joints. So, so important to make sure that's done, one, to decrease risk of injury, but two, to maximize performance as well. And there's strategies for that. And that's our number three priority. Before we go any further, that has to be at least on a corrective course, and that results in maximum performance. And then number four, the all important and maybe the most fun, movement. Sport is movement. And if you can master your movement, then you got a good chance of reaching your potential. And one of the big mistakes we see here is athletes wanting to get into the weight room and be strong before they're good movers. Listen, we've taken professional athletes out of the weight room for extended periods of time. to teach them how to move properly, and then we get them back in the weight room so they can enhance and improve their movement skills in their sport. And those are our priorities. Rest and recovery, sleep, number two, nutrition, hydration, number three, posture, range of motion around the joints, and number four, movement, and the rest we attack depending on the individual and the circumstances. And there you have it, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed these last couple of episodes. If you want to share them with your friends, please do so. Go to crushperformance.com. You can get the podcast, the newsletter, everything there. And we'll be back next week on Crush Performance, right here as we dig for answers to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you next time. Now go out there and get better.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Hey, everybody, do me a favor. Welcome to Duffified Live. Three-time Naked and Afraid survivalist, Amber Hargrove.
You see what they go through and you're like, the question is it really real?
Right.
I mean, do they go to tents at nighttime? I mean, I've been asked that so many times. And no, are you kidding me? What I would give to sleep in a tent at nighttime? No. You have to experience every single worst case, like, possible situation out there. And it's entertaining, you know. Ecuador, our bed broke with the girls, with me, Lacey, right, and Giovanna on night one. We had no fire. It was pitch black. We had just our camera and night vision, and that was it. And when the bed breaks and you touch the ground and you can't see anything and everything's moving, what do you do?
Yeah, no, seriously. What do you do?
I laughed. It shows yeah. us laughing. I'm like, I let Lacey build the bed, and I told her, I said, well, you know, we have a lot of weight together for three women. I said, you should kind of make it a little more sturdier. These are kind of like sticks you're using. We should get some logs. And right. she's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm like, okay. We get on the bed, like 20 minutes later, the whole thing busts. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're touching the ground. You could hear stuff move on the leaves. You can't feel everything. There was stuff everywhere. It was raining on us. I mean, it was probably the worst experience I've ever had, even past my Iraq deployments overseas. So that was the first night, day one right there, worst experience of my life.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.